Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sitnell-Reed, and our guests this week, Michael J. Gelman and Deborah Smith. Now, you've both had long and successful careers in the theatre as separate individuals. Have you also worked together over the years?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, it's been great since we created a theater company in Chicago, a rendition theater, and this is some of the plays that Deborah was working on were for that theater, and so we were able to work not only as writer and director, but also director-actor. So that was just a terrific, terrific gift as part of the marriage.
Yeah, that is. People interested in the same thing and supporting each other's passions, never mind careers or things like that.
But it can get very passionate.
Well, yeah, it's cemented our marriage, and it's also almost ripped our marriage apart.
And
sometimes,
careful.
Oftentimes in the same day.
So. It's true what they say. You definitely have to come up with a set of rules when you're working together.
Right.
Because it seems to, when there's any criticism in your artistic work, it seems to hurt more when it comes from your family.
Actually, yeah,
so you have
right,
to really, really be delicate with each other.
Yeah. And I think some friends of ours who work together in Los Angeles gave us a real good tip. They said, look, because they've been working together like 20 years, and we said, how do you guys do it? And they said, when we work together, we just make sure we absolutely know who's in charge on this project, and then we defer. And it's like, boy, that works great.
Yeah, or even on pieces of a project,
yeah,
you know.
Like, exactly.
Like when it comes to the script or whatever, when it comes to directing.
Yeah, see him, see her. And that works really well, especially with when we're going into production and rehearsing. See her, like, we would never do anything but that. See him, see her.
I've been part of a job share for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I found in a job share, which I imagine works with your relationship too, is you very soon know who's skilled at what. And so a lot of the deference comes to, well, you know, my partner's a lot better than at this particular thing than I am. So
it's hard for me because Deborah's better at almost everything. Yeah, so that makes it a lot harder for me to.
Speaking quite kind. I don't have as much patience.
Now, during all your acting and directing and running various organizations, you've worked with many famous people. Tell us about what you think of as the highlights of your life in the theater.
Gee, there's been a lot. Working at Second City was so much fun, not just because of the people. My first name drop time, but my first cast was John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner. These are the
cornerstone people of comedy.
Yeah, and that was my first crew as an actor. And then as a director, I've directed almost everybody who's now on television, that comes from Second City and from that comedy world. So that's been wonderful. But what was really fun was the people we met who were not part of Second City. Janis Joplin came. I went dancing with Janis Joplin, for crying out loud. And I got to meet some extraordinary people from the music world and from the acting world who would come and see our shows, and we'd hang out afterwards. And sometimes got to know a little bit. There were so many really brilliant people, and that was just the cherry on top of the.
I imagine.
It was great.
I just find that when you're working on stage with famous people, if you call them famous, they're just like everybody else. They're good at their job, though. Very good at their job. That's how they became famous, and they hold the bar high, so you can aspire to that bar.
Nice.
And it's, as an actor, it's great to have someone that talented in the room with you, because you know you're going to run as quickly as they're running, and you're on your game all the time. So it's lovely.
That's true, and boy, is that a great experience to feel like
you're very fortunate.
You got to be at the top of your game just to keep up. I love that, and you learn so much.
Yeah. Talking of learning, you also involved in teaching. Want to tell us a little about that and dovetails with what you do at Process Center?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see how you can work artistically, if that's what we do. I think it's a craft, not an art, but you know, people from outside the craft can call it art if they want. So in order to do the craft, I think you have to empty the vessel. You know, that very biblical thing, you have to empty the vessel in order to fill it back up again. So when one teaches, or at least when I teach, I try not to teach. I try to just create experiences where people can learn. I don't know anything, so it's hard to teach. But if I create an experience well and the students gain from it, then I think I've done my job well. And that has to do with me sharing what I know. And once I've done that, then I can learn new stuff. Pretty simple, really, yeah. And very just really rewarding.
So is Process Theatre going to offer classes?
We do plan on doing a retreat this summer. Mm-hmm. We were doing classes during the week and things like that, but what we're going to offer this summer is a master sort of retreat where we have three or four different teachers, maybe five, and where students have an opportunity to have five intensive days of acting classes.
Oh, brilliant.
So that you're going from one teacher to the next. And it becomes a little bit of a vacay up mm-hmm. in the Northumberland Hills. So we are working that out right now. You know, just like what Michael says, teaching also teaches us a lot about ourselves. Yeah. I was taught at Lambda that it's our responsibility. If once you get to a certain level, if you don't teach, then the craft dies because right. you're not passing it on. And yeah. It's very selfish for an actor or any artist, I think, to get to a certain level and not mentor somebody else. So we take great pride in our teaching, and we hope there are people out there that want to do this craft and don't give up, because it's very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And we do intend on having a master class this summer.
Well, it's fun. It allows us to, I mean, we're going to London to visit Deb's family this year, and we're paying for it because we can teach. We can't afford to go to London for 3.5 weeks. But if I teach some workshops and if Deborah teaches some workshops, then we can afford to go. And so it's also kind of nice on that level.
Pay our way around the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least help pay.
Yeah.
Now, this is a program where it started out, it's called Word on the Hills because we talk about writing a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to ask you, Deborah, how your writing fits in with all of this.
Yeah. Well, my first degree is in English literature from Concordia University. And I was writing when I was just a little girl. It was my first passion, and poetry and things like that. I was published when I was in Concordia University Press. I dabbled in journalism, so I scooped CBC when I was in my first year of university. That was weird. I don't know how I did that, but I did. I've always written creatively as my outlet. So I kept a diary when I was young, read voraciously, started writing short stories. I love the classics, and I love classical literature, and studied Shakespeare at Lambda in my master's degree. I was looking at adapting a lot of the classical work is translated. So the first adapter would write the first adaptation from a translation. And sometimes it's a bit like Strindberg's work. It's very heavy, the first adaptation. So the first time when we did Creditors, the first adaptation I read was really heavy, and it wasn't popping off the page, and it was very difficult for the actors to mm-hmm. get around. It was very wordy and quite boring. So my first stab at Creditors was to get it so that it could jump off the page and the audience would actually enjoy it, as opposed to sitting through dreck.
Do you think it's your lifeblood?
No.
Oh, okay.
So I looked at it like it's like chiseling away, you know, and I do love that if I'm given the time. I would never, at one point I did work as a writer, and I was a paid writer for public information. It was awful. I never want to be put in an office with a gun to my head and told, you have to write, ever. Because that is my joy, and
Yeah.
So when I look at the brilliance of text, and that's one of the things that just, like Shakespeare and these wonderful writers, I'm gobsmacked by their brilliance. And without that text, right, actors have nothing. They really don't. So that is like looking at a weaved cloth, you know, woven so beautifully. So I like to give it what it needs to get up. And you know, so many beautiful plays out there that need to be seen. So cool. If I can help that.
Now, the scene that you two were reading, that is written by you.
That's my writing, yes.
Great. And I think we should probably finish the scene off for listeners.
Okay.
We've heard some of it, and now I want to see what happens next. So
great.
Can you finish the scene out for us, perhaps?
We'd love to. Who are we to judge, eh?
Well, he'll be judged, though. He'll hang.
Eh?
She's accused him of rape, Cecil.
Rape? It'll never fly. Besides, not a hanging offense.
Under U.S. military law, it is.
So they still hang?
At Shepton Mallet, if he's proven guilty.
They won't hang one of their own boys, surely.
They will if he's a Negro.
Ah. You never said that. My God, Lizzie. I think you're on to something. Damn Yanks, they finally decide to join the war after we've all suffered for years, and then they bring their archaic laws here and then and...
Well, they might make an example of them to remind everyone else just what power they have.
Shepton is our prison.
It's now the leasehold of the Americans. I didn't know that either.
So my little intern is on the trail.
I'm not your little intern anymore.
You were once. Those were the days, eh?
Look, it's 4 a.m. A press deadline is...
Right. Well, get on it. Get writing. I'm leaving town. I'll stop by before the 2 o'clock train. You'll be here.
It seems I'm always here.
Yes, I suppose, with no one to go home to.
Peter will be back soon enough. Should I tell him you said hello?
Of course. However, I will come by tomorrow and see how you made out with that. It's big enough to get people riled up. I mean, quite the news, actually. And if the man hangs on in British soil, people will go mad. You've hit a story here, Liz. Who knows? With enough political pressure, this might be the one that embarrasses the Yanks to do the right thing for once.
It's not a war story.
Everything's a war story. Get writing. I'll bring tea around for 2 at noon, and then we'll catch up properly. Fish and chips, all right?
Yes, Cecil.
We can read your paper while we eat.
Good night, Cecil. Mind the door on the way out. It's old and it slams back at you.
Well, many thanks, Michael and Deborah. We've been speaking with Michael Gelman and Deborah Smith from Process Theatre. Where can our listeners find out more about Process Theatre and its productions?
We do have a website, www.processtheatre.ca. And we're open for any emails at info@processtheatre.ca. And you can reach us directly through that.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming in.
What an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And listeners, if you would like to connect with us, please visit our website, www.wordonthehills.com, and leave us a comment there or a query or even a suggestion for whom we might interview in future programs. And we hope you will tune in again next week on Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on Northumberland 897 Truly Local Radio.